It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, we take a look at a fascinating subject that was brought up by a caller who sent me a great email with a question, which in a nutshell was, why is it so hard for some people to believe that Joseph Smith's a prophet when they can see his translation efforts that he produced the Book of Mormon through the gift and power of God? And I might add, also the Pearl of Great Price that way. And yet, it's so easy for these critics and people of other faiths to accept that Moses is the author of the first five books of the Old Testament, when a lot of scholars don't quite agree with that. And so I thought that was a great question and well posed. So today I'd like to expand on that a bit and talk about the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, what they are, what they mean, about their authorship, and about the Book of Moses in LDS Scripture, the Pearl of Great Price. The Book of Moses is one of the most underutilized and least understood, and also one of the greatest demonstrators of Joseph Smith's authenticity as a prophet of God, of anything that he's done. And so I hope you enjoy this subject matter, even though it's something different than I've done. Let's start off, first of all, with Torah. Torah in Hebrew means to guide or to teach. We see this meaning in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 11. It has the same kind of a meaning or sense to it as the English word teaching or instruction. And so you can think of Torah as meaning instruction, teaching. This whole idea of the law and the prophets, meaning the Torah and the prophets, it's just incorrect. This common nickname, the law, is not what the word Torah means. So let's start off with that. How do we get the word law? Well, Jews in Alexandria, Egypt, translated the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Bible. And as they did so, they used a word nomos, which means norm or standard or doctrine, and later had the meaning of law, but that isn't the sense that the Hebrew word came from. So that's why it's often used as law. Torah means in the Jewish faith something more than just the first five books of Moses. It also, in the sense of instruction or teachings, encompasses things like oral law. And other written law than just the first five books of Moses. Mishnah, Talmud, Midrash, all those are part of Jewish Torah. Mishnah is a way of teaching. It's a systematic order. And Mishnah follows the order of the Bible. It includes more subjects and discusses more topics than does the Midrash. The Midrash, on the other hand, means interpretation of God's inspired message to the Jews. And so it's the interpretation of specific writings. It is derived from the word to resort to or seek to or inquire of. The word Midrash actually is in the Bible in 2 Chronicles chapter 13, verse 22, and in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 27, which talks about Midrash in the Book of Kings and Midrash and of the prophet Iddo. The final source that's part of the Torah for Jews is the Talmud. And this is the main text of the rabbinic Judaism and the main source of Jewish theology and law in ancient times. In nearly all Jewish communities, this Talmud was the center of Jewish life and culture. It was foundational, and it's essentially a collection of writings written during Jewish captivity in Babylon, although there were some earlier Talmud, the Jewish Talmud. So to sort of summarize up to now, in Judaism, Torah is a broad term, meaning oral and written scriptures, narratives, commentaries, interpretations, and so on. In Christianity, we use the Torah in a narrow sense to just mean the first five books of the Bible. So keep that in mind if you're talking to a traditional Jew as opposed to a Christian. The earliest name for the first part of the Bible seems to not just be Torah, but the Torah of Moses. This is fascinating because this is the earliest title. It appears in Joshua in chapter 8, verses 31 and 32, and again in Joshua in chapter 23. We find it also in 1 Kings chapter 2, 2 Kings. It appears in a number of places and also in other books of the Bible. There were other early titles called the Book of Moses, the Book of the Torah, the Book of the Torah of God, which is a little fuller rendition. And so if you were to say this in English, it would be the Book of the Instruction of God or the Book of the Teachings of God. That's kind of the essential underlying meaning and thought of what the Torah is. Christian scholars refer to the first five books as the Pentateuch, which comes from the Greek word meaning five scrolls. So for the Jews, this is the instruction or teaching of God. For Christians, it's the five scrolls. That's the way it's described as. Now, the Torah starts from the beginning of the creation of the world, obviously. It talks about the Exodus and about what happened to the Jews after they come back to what we now term as the Holy Land. Interestingly enough, the titles of even these first five books in the Torah, in the Jewish scriptures, is different from the title in our Christian scriptures now. Ours is called Genesis. That comes from the Greek word, which means creation. The Jewish word is called Bereshit, which means beginnings. Beginnings and creation are similar, but it's a little bit different. The second book, Exodus, we call it, which comes from the Greek. In English, we'd say it's the exit. In the Greek, it's the Exodus. The Jewish word is Shemot, names. So the second book is called Names. The third book is a little bit unusual. It's the Vayikra. He called is what that means. The Greek word Leviticus just means stuff about the Levites, essentially. Numbers is from a Greek word, arithmoi, which obviously arithmetic, numbers. The Jewish name, the Talmud name in the desert, it's a little bit different. All right, I've enough time with all that. The point is that even the underlying notion of what these books stand for and mean is a little bit different in the Jewish faith than it is in the Christian faith. We had to get down to authorship, and then I'd like to talk a bit about the LDS Book of Moses. Traditional Jews and Christians say that Moses wrote the Torah. And we're going to talk about whether or not that's true. If you have a question or comment about this show or about any other show or religious question, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond. And if you have a suggestion for a show, this is such a great one, feel free to send it in. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Our topic today is about the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament. Were they really written by Moses or not? Traditional Jews and Christians say Moses wrote the Torah. Modern scholars see the Torah as a product of the Babylonian exile. They say that in about the 6th century BC, which happened right after, of course, Lehi left Jerusalem with his group that we have a description of in the Book of Mormon. Just after that, Babylon conquered Jerusalem, and many of the Jews were let off into different places, but many into Babylon. And those who were in exile in Babylon had written and oral traditions with final revisions that were made to those written and oral traditions after this exile period essentially ended, after the Persians stepped in the 5th century B.C. The Talmud says that the Torah was written by Moses. Modern scholarship says maybe not so much. The Talmud, which, as I mentioned earlier, is essentially Jewish commentary on the first five books of the Old Testament and on other things as well, says that it was written by Moses with the exception of the last eight verses of Deuteronomy, which describe Moses' death and burial, which would be pretty hard for him to write himself. The idea in the Talmud is that Joshua wrote those last eight verses, although there is a highly respected rabbi who's just referred to as Rashi, who I think is fabulous, from centuries ago, who says that God told Moses these last eight verses of Deuteronomy about his death, and Moses wrote them with tears. That was a way to say that Moses did indeed write every single bit of it, even the part about his death and burial. The Mishnah includes the divine origin of the Torah as a core belief in Judaism. So this whole idea about Moses writing it is something that conservative Jews believe today. As I mentioned prior on the other side of the break, scholars today just don't believe that. They think there are many authors over many centuries. Scholars continue to debate how the Torah was composed, how many authors. There was this consensus about a Yahwist, an Elohist, and a priestly source. You can see the remnants of that in the book of Genesis, but there have been different ideas about that, and that consensus on that idea sort of collapsed about 30 years ago or so. Let me jump ahead. One of the main points today is that Jewish conservative scholars think that Moses is responsible for the first five books of Moses. Latter-day Saints have sort of this hybrid view between that position and the curve of and the liberal position, which is that Moses didn't have anything to do with it. Latter-day Saint belief is that Moses had inspiration from God, and he wrote things down, a whole number of things. And we would, Latter-day Saints would say that's contained in the Book of Moses in the Pearl of Great Price. But we would also say that after that initial inspiration was received, there was a lot of tinkering around and changes and things that happened. And so our position is somewhat of a hybrid. We would say that the Torah as we have it now was revised many, many times version of what Moses originally received from God. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has this book, the Book of Moses, which is part of its canon, in June of 1830. Now think of how early this is. This is at the time the church was first formed. The Book of Mormon has just been published. Joseph Smith then begins this new translation or revision of the Bible known today as the Joseph Smith Translation. I kind of don't like that title, but I'm not sure what else it would be, because it's more like an inspired expansion, if you will, rather than a strict translation as the words used today. It's not word-for-word translation. You could not go back in history and find an early manuscript that has what Joseph Smith has in the inspired translation. It's just not there. This is more like an expansion. It looks a little bit like Jewish Talmud and Mishnah. It really does. So the purpose, as stated by Joseph Smith and others, of this inspired translation even shows that there's information that was never in the Bible in the first place, because Joseph Smith himself said that it had things in it that were taken from the Bible or that were lost before it was even compiled. So this translation of the Bible has information that wasn't ever even there. The chapters that we have that make up the Book of Moses were first published in the church newspaper, the Evening and Morning Star, and then later in its other newspaper, the Times and Seasons, in the 1830s and 40s. The Book of Moses is, of course, considered part of our canon of scriptures. There are 8 chapters in the Book of Moses. They include, as separate chapters, different events. They were put in the first publication outside of the 2 newspapers that I've mentioned, the Evening and Morning Star and the Times and Seasons. They're put together in a published version first by Franklin D. Richards, who was an apostle who was serving as mission president in England. He only had access to the early versions of the Joseph Smith translation when he put it together. He didn't have the full original manuscripts. And so for this reason, the Book of Moses ends, and still to this day ends, abruptly, if you go to the end of chapter 8, kind of in the middle of the story of Noah. Now, if you get the Joseph Smith version of Genesis, you will find that there is more there, and the story does indeed continue. Now, I wanted to mention during the last couple of minutes that we had some of the fascinating things about the Book of Moses that Joseph Smith produced. There was this brilliant master's thesis by a scholar named Salvatore Cirillo, and he comes up with this argument that Joseph Smith had access to books like First Enoch. Why did he have to say things like that, that God, Joseph Smith made up the Book of Moses and he referred to these ancient works? Well, I'll tell you why he says that, because there's stuff in there that's only found in ancient works. We only have time for one that's extremely obvious. There is found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, in the Book of Giants, and also in First Enoch, references to this character named Mahujah or Mahijah that is found nowhere else except in what Joseph Smith produced as the Book of Moses. Take a look at Moses chapter 7, verse 2, and go to Moses chapter 6, verse 40, and you'll see these names, Mahijah and Mahujah. Odd names, strange names, unusual names, names that frankly are just absolutely impossible to believe you could just make up or come up from nowhere. And why is this fascinating and amazing? It is because they are authentic ancient names They were not available to Joseph Smith. And those are some of the reasons why what Joseph Smith did can be demonstrated, and there is great evidence for the idea that he was an authentic prophet of God. A lot of work needs to be done on the Book of Moses. Little has been done in comparison with the scholarship done on the Book of Mormon. I hope you've enjoyed this program. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.